Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Account of war from a poetic perspective. It is also a book that finds through prosaic poems beauty between the cracked surfaces of the war-torn country. Ahmad, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Michael.
All right. Why is poetry important?
Well, you know, poetry is important because, you know, poetry is, like you could say, is the voice of the voiceless people, from the people like who goes through a lot in their own country. For example, like in my country, for instance, you know, Iraq, we have hundreds of poets, we have hundreds of talent and everything. But, you know, when it comes to countries like United States, Canada, or Europe, it's hard for those people to understand the culture what's going on there. Because, you know, most of the time, we sadly just see the media, and we just see how the media kind of like show the wrong images all the time. So poetry, I believe, is like one of the languages that shows the voiceless images in the country.
All right. Why did you write this particular book?
Well, the reason why I wrote this book, because, you know, you could say it was kind of a challenge. I made it with myself. I was like, you know what, Ahmed, you're going to go to Iraq after 29 years of being outside. So let me write whatever I can see. So, you know, I saw so many things, you know, like, and I was like, you know, it's interesting that, you know, we always hear in the media that, you know, people are getting dead or people are getting shot. So the media is always showing a picture of, like, you know, killing, which in a way that, you know, makes people who are foreign, they're going to be like, oh, my God, what kind of country is this? You know, it's all about killing. So that's why when I wrote this book, I showed to the people, they are killing, but there is other side of killing too. Like, there's other things happen. There's other reasons and factors that create those images. So to me, I feel like really proud of myself, first of all. And, you know, to write such a book and, you know, to have sent all those images from inside of Iraq and translate them into English.
You know, traveling to Iraq, I'm sure wasn't an easy proposition. Did you ever consider writing under a pseudonym?
Well, actually, most of the people knows it's like called Bleeding Heart Poet. I got that name actually from a journalist, you know, in the United States, because, you know, back then, you know, she had a magazine and she was like, oh, you know, like, I have read your poems and I like them. So then she asked me for that and I was like, I don't have one. So, like, I'll give you a Bleeding Heart Poem because, you know, your poems are really kind of like truth and dark and sad.
I was going to ask you that question, that sometimes do you feel that a poet can feel emotion but not feel emotion due to the cognitive
Emotions, well, you know, like emotions, you know, you have to have emotions when you write. The reason why is so, you know, your writing can be related to others. If you're going to write emotionally, then your writing is going to sound like kind of like blurry or either going to sound like unclear. Every emotional writing that I have written or I have posted or published, I have got a lot of feedback. So when I started doing that and saw the results were such a good result, So, you know what? I was like, you know what? I'm like, let's keep writing, you know, emotional. And, you know, the more emotional you write, Michael, trust me, it's hard. But, you know what? After you see the result, you'll be like, it's worth it.
You know, I read the book 3 times. And I think each time I became more emotional because of such powerful scenery, powerful words, the sense of loss, in some places the sense of new beginning. You've written a number of books. Do you want each book to stand on its own, or are you trying to build a body of work with connections between each book?
Well, that question is a very smart question, by the way. Let me just mention this thing. Also, my answer, I would say yes, yes and no. The reason why I would say yes is because, you know, as I said to you before, from the previous interview we had, every poem that I write have 1 or 2 lines of my own personal life. So that's why I said it to other people or even to my fans. I was like, if you guys want to know my biography, read my poem. Because the more you read my poems, the more you will know something about me. Like, oh, yeah, Ahmed is like that. Yeah, Ahmed suffered from this. So the reason why I wrote those books is because, you know, I want one day, you know, people to read them. And, you know, you feel like the languages and the way my, you know, like the way I use the keywords, how I change, you know. So, you know, like, that's why you see some people, they're like, you know, from your first book to this book, you can see a lot of improvements. Like when it comes to your, you know, situation with depression, anxiety. Like, you know, the first book was, like, really severe. The second was, like, okay. Kind of, like, we see the healing part. And third one, we see, like, depression again. So you can tell it's, like, connected to each other. Why? Because I want to show people that, you know, even if I'm a writer, even if I'm whatever you can call me, I'm going to still have disorder just like you. So that's why, you know, you have always to be connected to people. And people, when they read this kind of writing, they love, you know, to read more of you and more and more. Why? Because they said, you know what, me and this guy, we have the same problem. You know what, I'm going to love this guy and I'm going to keep reading him. And that's why, you know, I always mention those kind of disorders, even though some of them, you know, I have them, like, not to fear as much as some other people do. But, like, you know what, I'm, you know, it's good to mention those things so others, when they read it, they can feel better about themselves. So they don't feel like, oh, why am I this one? Why do I suffer from depression and not him or not her? It's always good to be with the people side because, after all, we're all going to go to the same spot. And, you know, we're all going to be equal, you know, when the day of judgment will come.
I agree. Let's take a short break and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Practice for you?
Well, you could say yes and no. The reason why I could say yes is because, you know, sometimes, you know, like, many of us, especially the, you know, I'm one of those people, I would say, you know, like, whenever I write, you know, whenever I have a problem and face problem in my life, I don't like to share it overly, like, to everybody, you know. Only if the problem is, like, kind of like small problem, then I would share it. But if it was, like, really personal problem, I would not, I'm not a big fan of, you know, going around and tell everybody, like, yeah, look what happened to me, look what happened. Part of it, why I said, yeah, because, you know, like, let's just be honest, Michael. Sometimes, you know, it's kind of sad, but we live in a world where people don't have this, you know, intention to help others.
Yeah.
we have, you know, we're seeing it getting less and less. Like, for instance, when you get into the subway station, you will never see someone talking to each other, you know. You see everybody have their earbuds, listening to music or playing video games, and everybody their own eyes on their phone. It's like they don't have a second to look and say, oh, do you want to have a seat? Like, you know, I see it and it breaks my heart. So that's why, you know, I see so many, you know, that's why we see so many people giving up from life, and they're just going to end up their life, like, doing some unethical things, like, you know, to suicide or, like, you know, you name them. And part of it was when I said, yeah, you know, no, is because, you know, as I told you before, like, you know, I believe in God. And, you know, if you really have something, you know, that really bothers you, and, you know, you feel like all the doors of life have shut down on you, there's always, you know, you can always, like, sit on your knees and look up and read some, you know, try to talk with God, you know, it helps a lot, you know. But, you know, don't, you know, even if you have a best friend, you're talking about the problem, your friend's going to look at you and be like, you know, man, I understand how you feel, but I'm sorry I cannot help you. But, you know, he will never tell you, you know. But instead of him, he will tell you that. You know what I mean? So that's why I said, you know, as you do yes and no. But I see it, you know, I would say all the things, you know. If you have any problem in your life, even if you don't want to share your plans or your story, write it down. Trust me. Once you write it down, it feels such a relief to the point you're going to, you know, you're going to be like, oh, my God, I want to do something now. And trust me, Michael, you know, whenever I write a poem, you know, whenever I wake up in the day, I write my poem, it happened with me the night before, or, the, you know, a few days will happen to me. I feel like so positive to the point, like, you know, I'll give you a small example, a small story. I'll tell you a small story. So what happened to me recently is like, you know, I'm going through a lot right now in my life. So every day when I wake up, when I have this imagery of poetry or a dream or something happy, I just write it down into a poem, and then, you know, I take my time, edit it and everything, and then I post it, right? So I work in a bookstore like that, and there was this woman, she came, and, you know, I told her, you know, we stopped, you know, she asked me for a book, and I told her, yeah, I recommend you this book and this book. And she brought her friend the other day. And she was telling her, she was like, oh, my God, this guy's so positive and so happy, and I'm sure his life is full of happiness and joy. It made me laugh a bit, but it made me happy at the same time. And I was like, listen, nobody have a life perfectly happy. And she was like, okay, can I ask you something? I was like, what's up? And she's like, what do you do to stay always positive? I was like, well, you know what? Negative thoughts, this is what I do every day. I write them down. Once you write them down, even, you know, even if you can burn the paper or, you know, shred it, you know, like burn it, you feel so much happy. Why? Because you feel there's something that annoyed you the most, you removed it from your life. But when it comes to poetry, it try to write in a professional language that you feel like, you know, oh my God, this is my best I can get. Don't worry about the mistakes. Don't worry about, you know, the structure of poetry, because, you know, poetry right now is unbelievable how many people can write poetry and how many forms they can create. So, you know, that's my advice to people. You know what? Write poetry. Even if you think, okay, my poetry is not the best one, it's okay. We all learn. Even if you're going to go to school to study creative writing, you're not going to write your first story, the first, you know, like the best one, and you think you're going to sell millions of dollars. You know, people have to have the start. You see, like at my workplace, everybody's telling me, how come you don't have your books here? How come you don't sell them here? I was like, guys, give me a time, you know. Time will come, and then, you know, well, my best book will be on the shelf. Because, you know, you don't have to push it, because the more you push for your same luck, it will never come clear. You see, like at my bookstore, I can tell you we have authors who have 20 books. They have written 20 books, and we have all 20 books, you know. But guess what? When they have one or two of their books that sell the most, and the others you can sell, like they're still on the shelf, and you will see, like, once in a while someone comes up to you like, yeah, I have read this one. Yeah, no, I haven't read this one. Maybe I'll buy this one. So it seems the same thing when it comes, you know, in poetry and, you know, like spiritual writing.
Speaking of books, is your book available on Amazon?
Yes, it is, and the good news, this book is also available on Barnes & Noble's online. If you go to their, any of their branches, you know, in the U.S., they're available if you go online and order it online. Same thing in Canada. If you go to Indigo or Chapters or Kohl's, you can even order it online. And I just want to say thank you, a big thank you to Mr. Chris Haldum, who's the owner of the publisher location I made my book with. Because of him, he did such a hard work to make my book available in all those three companies.
All right, all right. You know, I know that you are a prolific writer. I've seen your posts
mm-hmm.
online. I know that you have other books and plan to write a number of other books, as we've talked about.
Yep.
How long on average did it take you to write this particular book? Knowing that you were traveling to Iraq, I guess from that process until its completion, how long did it take from conceptualization to finish?
Well, you know, like, I'm going to be honest with you, Michael. Some of the poems I wrote in this book, I wrote them before my trip. And some of the others, I wrote them after my trip. So what happened was, you know, it was kind of like, you know, poems that I wrote before and after. So, if you know, and I believe, you know, like, the reason why I put them in a mix, like, you know, I didn't put them in order, because I want you to feel like, you know, see the difference. And then, you know, I decided at the end to write my childhood poem. It was the last one poem, you know. And the reason why I did that is because, you know, I want people to see, oh, my God, now why, you know, we know why this guy, this writer was thinking so much, like, kind of like, don't talk about his country. So technically, I would say technically it took me like almost like 4 or 5 years.
4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
You know, like, yeah, because you see, like, you know, for instance, you know, like, you have a poem called Floating from Aleppo. And Aleppo is a city in Syria which faced so many acts of terrorism against the regime and against the ISIS group. So this poem, I wrote it during the beginning of the, you know, like, when the ISIS was, like, controlling, taking over the town and the city. So you see, like, you know, if you think about what happened in the civil war in Syria, it happened, like, 5 years ago. So you see, this is what was the beginning. And then I wrote, you know, the poem, My Name is Iraq, which I wrote it back at the time when, you know, like, Americans, when they decided, you know, like, to hit some bombs on Syria. And I was like, oh, my God, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
As you were writing,
mm-hmm.
what did you feel that you needed to edit from the book? I'm sure there were a lot of personal things that you needed to edit, but anything that you can share?
Well, you know, like, the book when I wrote it, you know, I had so many poems. But then, you know, I was talking to my fiance, which I want to say hi to her. Her name's Naomi Stafford. She's one of the weirdest brilliant women I love the most. So, you know, like, I showed the poems I wrote before, like, and after. And she's the one who's like, you know, she helped me. She's like, you know what, pick this poem. Yeah, pick this one. Put this one on the side. The reason why she did that, right now, like, as I told you, you know, like, you know, when I think about it, I was like confused. Just like, you know, like, what are you doing? She's like, let me do, and I'll tell you what I'm going to do. So, you know, I did it, and then I put the book, you know. I sent it to the publisher, and the publisher was very excited. And now I see the ones that she put on the side. And then, you know, those ones on the side, guess what? They're going to be the part two of Poems from Iraq. So what she was doing, she's like picking the, you know, like, the ones that fit with the title in order to see if there's anything, you know, like, if this book will make it, then, hello, there's part two. And the good news, there is a part two for the book now.
A part two? What will it be comprised of? What will you share?
Well, part two is going to be more about, like, you know, the positive, the good side, the bright side of the visit, and also the bright poem that I wrote about my country. So it's not going to be something, like, sad or very, like, you know, depressing. It's going to be something when you're going to read it, you're going to feel like you're actually in Baghdad, you're sitting in a coffee shop. You're not going to be feeling like, you're sitting and you watch dead people on the street. So technically, it's going to be like, kind of like, you know, little dreams that actually are real dreams. They're not like fiction dreams, you know what I mean? So hopefully it's going to be a very good book. It's a bit hard, I'm not going to lie, because, you know, the editing process, you know, is a bit hard. Also, I'm editing some new ones that I wrote when I was in Iraq as well. So it's going to be a very good experience, and I can't wait to see it happen, like, you know, coming up.
As a poet, what do you think is primarily the most difficult part of the artistic process?
Well, that's the most hard thing from being a poet is to see, like, you know, if you're, if, you know, because, you know, Michael, if you write a poem, you never know if the next poem is going to be similar or different.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, there was a period of time, you know, like, I used to write a poem, and, you know, I wrote so many poems, and then, you know, like, at some point, you know, I showed them to my fiance, and I was like, you know what, I think I'm going to make poems, a book, you know, because those poems are really getting a good number of people liked, and, you know, people come to really forward those poems. She's like, what do you think? She's like, well, you know, guess what, they all have similar theme. And she's like, as a reader myself, you know, like, I'm not going to lie to you, I feel like they all connect to the same theme, which is like, you know, a sad lover describing how much he misses his wife or his girlfriend, you know what I mean? So it's very hard, you know, for you to write something different and choose different metaphors and different wording, because, you know, people are picky nowadays, you know, even when they read, some readers are very picky, you know. If they're going to read a poem about you, they're going to be like, oh my God, we love this guy. And then the next poem you're going to write, and the poem is weaker, people, they're going to give up on you. They're like, you know what, I don't think I'm going to read another poem, you know what? Because people, you know, they always love to read something new. It's like a song. Like, you see, if you go to the world of music right now, every artist works on creating something totally new. You'll never see an artist like Johnny Cash who writes about his own journey. If we have Johnny Cash nowadays, I'm telling you the truth, he will never be make it as much as he was back in the days. Why? Because every period of time is different. And as I told you earlier, now we live in a period where people show less intention and care to others. You see, like, for instance, Johnny Cash's period of time was more like, you know, about wars and how much people feel connected and how much people feel anger from the wars they had and everything. But nowadays, people, they want more, you know, like, listen to music about, you know, fantasies. They don't want to hear anything about realistic. Why? Because they said, you know what, I don't listen to the news, and I'm trying to go into a world that's made of flowery, filthy, you know, like something pinky, basically. So nothing really, but, you know what I mean? So that's why, you know, this is the hard thing, a poet or artist, as I mentioned, you mentioned earlier.
I think for me, the most difficult part is putting my work out there for review. I don't like that.
Yeah.
Because it's scary.
Well, yeah, no,
it's very scary.
You know, you actually remind me of something very funny, you know. You know, when I was in college, you know, one time, you know, I took, you know, this class was, like, about poetry. And, you know, because, you know, I was like, you know, I always looked, you know, I'd never, you know, judge my poems 10 on 10. So, you know, the teacher is like, you know, I need you guys to write a poem about this situation, and nah, nah. So me, I was like, oh, that's easy for me. So I wrote one poem, and I thought, you know, like, I'm going to get an A. Guess what I got? I got D plus. And I was like, what? D plus? So, you know, it was kind of like, so you see this experience, whenever I write a poem, I have this experience in my brain. I was like, you know what, is that going to be A plus or D? But I know, to be honest with you, Michael, with the social media help, social media is like, you know, staple for us. You know why? Because, you see, that's what I was talking to my other poets friend, and, you know, we were talking about, you know, the number of likes and everything. And one of them, he said to me something really clever. He said, you know, Amit, whenever I see a poem that I post a poem on my wall or I publish it in a journal or something, when I see people have, like, you know, 20 and more likes, I know this poem is going to be a pick for my new book. But if I see a poem that have less than 20 or like 5 or 10 likes, you know, I'm just going to ignore it. Which, you see, it's a big help.
So it sounds like you read your book reviews.
Of course, yeah. This is one of my favorite things, you know. Like, you know, I have a lot of, like, wonderful people that, you know, love to read my book. And, you know, whenever I tell them, I was like, hey, guys, you want to read them? They're like, sure, send me it. I was like, okay, in exchange with an honest review on Amazon. And, you know, even if I'm going to get, like, one that's negative, it's okay because, you know, the negative can be the truth one, you know. But even the positive one, when you read them, it makes me happy. So that's why we keep writing, right? if we don't have reviews, you know, what we write there.
I agree with that. Now, I also know that you are, and you've talked about it briefly, very active on social media. How do you think it's affected the way that you write?
Well, because, you know, like, the reason why I'm active is because, you know, I have so many writers' friends. Like, I'm going to be honest with you, I met more friends on Facebook than in real life. Real life, like, I only have 2 best friends. So, you know, it's kind of funny that, you know, it is,
yeah.
You know, but people, you know, like people in my community or even people here, they know me, you know, when they remember my name, they're like, oh, hi, Ahmed, you know, how are you? That's it, you know. But on Facebook, on social, the reason why I'm active is because, you know, people, you know, like, I believe, you know, like one time I wrote, like, you know, I went to the clinic, for example, and, you know, I put my phone away, and then, you know, when I went back to see my Facebook, I saw so many people, and that makes me happy, you know. I was like, you know what? Those people, they deserve the best. And, you know, sometimes when I hear their stories, Michael, it touches me a lot. Why? Because as I told you, we're connected, right? We have, you know, like connection, either it's like if you have some disorders or some problems. Because, you know, let's just be honest. None of us have a life that looks like heaven. So when you meet with those people, and, you know, you see me active, why? Because, you know, I'm looking for something, you know. I was like, hey, guys, you know, because one time, like, person, I can tell you, like, what happened to me. I wrote a poem. It was, like, a very short poem. And I posted my Facebook, and I saw this guy all the way from Japan, and he was like, oh, my God, I love your poem. You know, I have a box where I collect all the poems that I love. And that made me happy. And that made me realize that, you know what, I should be more active. But, you know, guess what? I have other friends who I met online now, so they told me the opposite. They told me I'm actually not active enough.
Mm.
So, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, you think you're active, others think you're active too, but guess what? You're not active enough for other people.
It's true. You know, I think the following question is my very favorite one. What new information did you learn about yourself as a result of writing your book? What did you learn new about Ahmad?
Well, you know, a few days ago it was my oldest brother's wedding, you know, and I met with one of his best friends, and you know we were talking about what's going on in Iraq and everything, and you know it was like more like men talking about politics, which is kind of boring discussion. So, you know, he said to me something funny because, you know, I told him, I said, you know, every night when I was in Baghdad, I couldn't sleep because I was crying because I was writing poetry, you know. And then, you know, I was like, you know, when you write the poetry, it's really hard for me. And that's why I said to my fiance, I said, sweetie, if you're ever going to have a boy or daughter, I'm not going to let them be a poet because, you know, it's going to be so much time for them. They're going to have to go through a lot. So anyway. So, and then, you know, he told me something funny. He's like, bro, you know what's funny? I was like, what's up? And he's like, we look tough on the outside, but we're very sensitive from the inside. I was like, here you go. So this book made me realize that when I wrote this one, what is new about me, it realized to me that nothing is impossible, you know. You see, like, this book to me, Michael, I'm not going to say that because, you know, I'm showing off or anything.
Yes.
But it's not one of those books that, you know, I'm going to be like, oh, my God, you know. But, you know, it made me realize, I learned so many things. Like, one of the things I learned, don't push yourself to, you know, like, don't rush. You know, like, take your time. You know, take your time, take your time, take your time. And that's what I keep saying to everyone and to myself, too. Why? Because, you know, I believe taking your time in the world of writing is very important. Like, you know, my girlfriend's cousin, uncle, he wrote a book about economics. And, you know, I have read it a few pages, and I was very impressed. And he told me, he's like, yeah, this book took me almost like 5 to 6 years to write it. And it was like a small, very, very clever book, Michael. But you see, him, he's an old man. Like, he's like older than both of us. But you see, still, he managed to take his time to write it. Because, he, you know, he was like telling me, like, when you write a book, take your time. It's not a poem. You know, don't think about a book, you know, like, oh, tomorrow I'm going to post a book, you know. Because, you know, you have to create a respect to your name. So people, when they're going to read a book about you, that you took your time, they're going to be like, oh, my God, I want to read another book of him. You know? So that's what that book was talking about. That taught me to be patient and to be more wiser about your choices. So, yeah, that's what you're going to learn from Amit. You're going to learn from Amit. He's a very patient, but he's not a slow rider. But he's very slow in reading other people's books.
You know, I read your book, as I said, 3 times, and earmarked the pages of the poems that specifically stuck out to me.
Mm-hmm.
As the author of the book, and you kind of talked about author to author, but what piece of advice would you give your readers about your work?
Well, the piece of advice I give to my readers, if they want to read this book or any other book of my books, you know, be ready, because, you know, I'm a very emotional person. All of my books, they're full of emotions. So if you're ready to be emotional with me, you are always welcome. But if you're, like, feeling like, no, I'm not into emotional, or, you know, like, you know, all those emotional topics, you know, I'll say, you know what, thank you for thinking about me. But, you know, you're always welcome to read if you want to, you know. But I want people to know one thing, you know. When I write a poem, I write it because of my own feeling. I'm not going to write a poem because sadly, we see so many people right now, Michael, especially in school, and that's kind of, it's annoying. It's like, it pisses me off a bit, you know. I see so many students, you know, when they read my poems at my workers, school, like my workplace, you know, for instance. I see so many younger students in college and in high school. And so sometimes I show them my writing, right? I'll be like, hey, guys, you know, I wrote this poem. Do you guys want to read it? They're like, yeah, sure. But then the first question comes up to them, he's like, oh, you know, I like it, but I'd rather it was rhyming. I told them, you know, I'm going to tell that to my readers. I'd be like, guys, you know, if you want to read my book, read it, feel free. But don't ask them, I'm going to read a very rhymed poem. The reason why I say that, because, you know, rhyming poetry is an old language of poetry. And I'm sorry to say that, but, you know, I see so many poets there doing it over and over and over and over. Good for them, you know. If you feel like you can do it, do it. Why? Because some people are creative, more creative in writing but rhymes. But a poem is about feeling. So, you know, like, don't judge my work as, you know, like 1.2, 2.2. Like, you know, every poem is a story. And every poem, every story is an emotional feeling I have. So, it's like, you know, and what I'm trying to say is, like, don't judge the book by its cover. You know what I mean? Like, don't judge a poem by its own wording. You know, the reason why I made it easy is because, you know, I want everybody to understand the language I write with, you know? And that's what happened recently. Like, you know, a few years ago, there was this Japanese writer who actually won the Nobel Prize. Only because one of the reasons why he won it was because he used easy English. He doesn't use one of those, like, you know, Shakespearean English to make it complicated. And he won Nobel Prize for it. So, you know, what I would say to people, read it with an open heart and be ready for emotional writing, you know. And don't read it with, you know, like, with an anger or, you know, you're judging. Because, you know what, I'm sorry to say that, but this is my story and this is the way I write it. So, you know, if you like it, you know what. Because, you know, I'm trying to be closer to you, closer to your heart. I'm trying to tell you it's okay. Life is still beautiful, you know. But don't judge my wordings and things. So this is the only thing I would say to my people, like, open your heart and be wise and be humble when you read, you know. Only, even if you are a good writer, you write lyrics and whatever, you know, good for you, you know. But don't try to be like, yeah, this guy, he doesn't know how to write or this. Sometimes, you know, like, I have met many creative writers, you know, from U.S., and they showed me their work, Michael, and they're like, so amazing. I asked them, I was like, how come you never, you know, write a book or something? They told me, they're like, oh, well, you know, my daughter or my son or my husband or my wife, she thinks they're not good enough. So I would just want to say to those people, you know, please let them write, let them express, let them be free. Don't judge people and don't judge their wordings, you know. So, you know, that's what I want to say to my readers, because, you know, sometimes I feel like they have to know that poetry is for everybody and for everyone. And poetry is not supposed to have rhyme, or poetry has to have this and this. Poetry is like any kind of fiction story, except it's written in a different way. You know?
Yes, I do.
And that's all.
Let me ask this question. How can your readers stay in touch with you?
Wait, what?
How can your readers stay in touch? Yes. How can your readers stay in touch with you?
What does that mean, sorry, Michael? What does this question mean?
One more time. How can your readers stay in touch with you?
Oh, okay, sorry. Oh, my God, sorry. Oh, my God.
That's all right. That's all right.
Okay. Well, you know, I have a page on my Facebook called Bleeding Heart Poets Copyright, and they can mail me any of the questions or concerns, or even if they're like, you know, like if they want to contact me, my Facebook is there for everyone, you know. You can send me a message or, you know, like asking questions. And I'll be more than happy to help others, you know. Like, I don't know if I told you that, but, you know, my poems, you know, some of them were then sent to Africa for school, for kids to teach. And there was a former teacher who was actually in Africa. She asked me, she's like, I'm going to use your poems as an example, you know, as a school materials to teach our kids in Africa how to write poetry. So, you know, like, I'm not one of those people I'm going to ask, you know, like, oh, how much money are you going to send me, you know? So, you know, my page is always there to help others. Even if they want to write a book, I'm going to help them with publishers. I'm there for everyone because I believe, you know, once you help, once you give, you will, you know, once you take, you will give. And, you know, it's like, you know, what we always say, you know, be kind to one and to each other, to one another, sorry.
What's in the works for you next? Where do you go from here?
Like, you mean, like, what is my future, folks?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay, well, you know, my future books, you know, hopefully it's going to be, you know, as I told you, like, earlier, Words from Iraq, Part 2, which is going to be next year. But the most important ones, which is the most exciting one, is I have a book that is going to be published on the 25th of July called Roofs of Memories. It's going to be, like, a small chapbook of, like, 30 to 25 pages.
Mm-hmm.
It will be, you know, it will be printed in England from the publisher called Anaglow Submissions, and it's owned by he's a poet. I don't know if he's a poet. I'm sorry. His name is Mark Brosowick. So, you know, like, this is going to be my next book, hopefully, this month. And then I'm going to take a small break. Well, not technically break, but I'm going to start writing from next year, 2020. I'm going to have one going to be titled Crying on the Moon, which is going to talk about the problem I'm facing right now in my recent life. And as I said, Wilderness from Iraq Part 2. And hopefully I'm going to have one that's going to be very different. It's going to be like small poems called Because I Am. And hopefully the fourth one is going to be about like funny poems. It's going to be like, it's going to be a surprise. I'm not going to say anything about it, but it's going to be a surprise, the funny one.
Okay. All right. Well, what we're going to do is take a brief break and be right back. Ahmad will be sharing his work on air. We'll be right back. Back. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and I'm here with Ahmad Al-Khattat. The telephone number is 646-787-1631 if you have questions for Ahmad. But what we'd like to do now is to turn to Ahmad reciting some of his works. So, Ahmad, you're on.
Okay, thank you so much, Michael. So I'm going to be reading poems that I have never that more popular than anywhere else but in my book, Words from Iraq. I'm going to read the first one called In a Random Street of Near Baghdad. The first car I was in the street of Baghdad, the driver was playing a radio station with a song of my favorite artist. The name of the song was Liar, and Everything About You is a Lie. At that moment, I felt down and knew that my painting of my homeland was not the same. I felt nostalgia for roses and flowers. I missed the sound of the voice was destroyed. So much feelings I have and nothing was seen but lifeless streets except the lonely moon. It's hidden from the sun of my sorrows. All I could remember was the city street where the pictures of majors besides the leaders who damaged the rainbows. And the scent of the sinless wine in my thirst. Even the people are walls from the inside. Everything was rising in my great brain. My depression became severe. My anxiety became a sharp knife. Yet, my eyes were unable to cry about my own misery, since my dreams weren't stable. So that's the first one. Second one is called Carlos Dream. A sinner spirit forced me to sleep, with my flesh bleeding my sins away. On the pillow of my daily misery, and cover myself with a dead body. I close my eyes as my heart does too. I dream with colored dreams. Believe me, it was not a nightmare, but a dark journey in my breast city. Black dust from Baghdad tunnels, white fog to hide in the broken wings. I looked for my childhood house. I sought for the first love of my life. I forgot to mention that I was blind. I hear the mourning from the graveyard. I made a vow to cry my blindness out and stole the rainbow colors on her. It started from her glowing hair all the way down to her pinky toe. I asked for a kiss from her red lips so I could stop the flow of blood. I discovered I was wrong about red. I saw some women lose their virginity. It created a pleasure into a crime scene. Two hearts died as their emotions were innocent. Some humans swallow each other's blood as if they were drinking soft drinks from a straw. My age, one of 100 years of dusty graves. It turns into a 10-year-old innocent child. Knowledgeable about everything around me, I could define the gold digger from a one-night stand before going to one, as I have been betrayed and lost the one I loved. I realized that I was the last soldier to free Baghdad from all gunmen and all the mindless terrorists. With one old gun within one magical bullet, not terrified, but I believe violence brings violence. I shot my bullet in the dark clouds in the real life. The rain stole open the criminals in this world. My dreams got the calls back when peace arose and I died happily and went flying up to the heaven. And the next one is called If Santa Claus Was In. The souls of dead angels who never liked the sound of weapons came last night for a short visit. In between my dreams of Baghdad, they asked me why Santa Claus can't come to visit us, since he never protects us in the real life, or never appears in my dreams. If Santa Claus was in Iraq, he would be blind from the weeping. Since his late arrival, he wants to give them a life during Christmas time. If Santa Claus was in Syria, he would never forgive himself, knowing that all the children wearing tombs in the dying garden. If Santa Claus was in Palestine, he would be the only soul to witness watching children search each other's destroyed home to receive their gift. If Santa Claus was in Africa, he would probably be dead from watching children with the mind to kill their parents or their childhood friends. I've got nothing to say to them, but I promise them that I will talk to him. Sadly, they never knew that he doesn't exist in the real world or even in our dreams. One of them asked me why their children are happier with their gifts, while us, we celebrate Christmas with no gift, but with the joy of our parents. And the last one is my childhood, the one I told you about it earlier. My teacher said that she lost her childhood once she knew that Santa Claus was not real. She asked me how I lost my childhood. I answered her with a heart breaking to tears. I lost my childhood once I knew that my friends were dead from plastic guns that killed them all. I tried to save their lives. I knocked on their doors. No one answered, but the doors opened to show me their graves. The Second World War II ended years ago, but their mothers witnessed it, as proof as they're blind now. I looked up in the middle of the sky to watch their souls as girls who don't like the sound of horrifying weapons. Do you want me to read
Thank you,
one?
Amon. Yes,
no,
what I'd like you to do is to read some of my favorites, because it's so different to hear your voice.
Okay. Well, to be honest with you, I wrote you those ones I read now are your favorite ones. But I'm going to read you my favorite one. I'm gonna tell you the story before.
Okay.
The poem I'm going to read you is also mentioned in the book. It's called Iraqi Soil. The story of this poem, first of all, because when I went to my country, stayed there for 45 days, right? And it was the time when, young men going there voluntarily to fight against ISIS. And I remember back in the town where I lived, there was this father, talking to his 17-year-old boy before going to, volunteering to fight against ISIS. And he was telling him, like, son, make sure, do well and come back, because I need you, because I'm getting old. And, I cannot be responsible enough because, I have severe problems with my life and everything. So it was a very sad conversation. I witnessed it in my own life, It was the middle street, and everything. So the son was like, oh, daddy, don't worry. I'll be fine. And I will come back and I'll make you proud of me and I'll help you, and I'll help my mom and my sisters to get a better life. Because, they were a poor family. Okay, Michael?
Yes.
And, the boy, he went, as I said earlier, he volunteered to work. And in a week or something, I saw that, they put a sign with his picture and they said, rest in peace. The young soldier, he died after 1 or 2 days of fighting. So I wrote this poem for this boy. I even went to his funeral and I saw his father. His father was crying endlessly. And his mom and his sister were like shouting and crying and mourning. It was a very depressing situation because he was only 17, right? And the father was like really depending on his son because he had only this son and he had like 6 daughters and his wife. And they had a poor life, So definitely you can imagine how much hard life the father had to do to live. So the title of the poem is Iraqi Soil. I saw an old man, he was around my father's age. Or maybe even older. He was crying until I saw his son pouring Iraqi soil on his bare flesh, only because he was getting ready to die slowly before the victory of the war. So you see, as I told you, it's like a small poem, but the story behind it is like very, very like, dark.
Yes.
And so yeah, go ahead.
No, just hearing you read them brings the poems to life. Hearing them from your voice brings the poems to life, and I really appreciate you for your willingness to share. So please continue.
Sure.
I've got two that I'd like you to read, but please continue.
Okay. So I'm going to read you this one. This one, is also, I'm going to tell you the story, because, every poem, as I told you earlier, have a story behind. So this one called Children of the Moon. Children of the Moon is basically I'm writing for the orphanage, Because, I met one of my friends, he actually worked in the orphanage. And I was like, how many orphanages do we have in Iraq? And he was like, over 1 million now. And I was very shocked with the number. He told me over 1 million. I was like, 1 million orphans? He's like, yeah, that's how much we have now. And I was like, what's the reason do you think we have such a high number of orphans, He's like, well, you know, because of the war and everything. But then he told me something very important that, you know, maybe you never heard of it, Michael. You'd be surprised, which is true, sadly. Is because, you know, some parents, they have so many kids to the point where they give away some of their kids to the orphanage by thinking they will get money from the government.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And, you know, once they send their kids to the orphanage, technically the orphanage take it and they will never give it back to them, you know. And they, you know, they fight with them, they start being upset, they look for the money. And the worst part, Michael, those parents, they are rich. They're not even poor parents. So they just give their kids away because they think, oh my God, you know what, we can make some money. And yeah, it's depressing.
Wow.
So that's why, you know, Little Boy called Children of the Moon. Because, you know, he told me that those kids who cry, who are confused, they're like, oh, when is daddy coming back to pick me up? I don't like it here. Because, you know, the friend that says to them, oh, this is your new school, you're going to like it. I'm going to come back to visit you in a day or so. They don't tell them this is the orphanage. So see how hard it is. And they have to realize it by themselves because they're not young kids. They're like 10, 12 years old. So, you know, I found those kids are very innocent. So that's why his name is the poem, Children of the Moon. Children of the Moon were innocent, but their parents were greedy and selfish. They taught them nothing of knowledge or practical. Instead, they taught them to be dirty beggars. Their life had been colored with the color of dust and confusion. They were great beneath their innocent joy. Their parents walked them to the orphanage in the night with the intention to sell them, to stain their hands black and dusty. They spent the night awake, staring at the moon until sunlight, with tears wondering why they have miserable lives. Day come and night go by. Those children die for feeling depressed at a young age, from questions without answers, from talking to the moon about dreams they faded in the night, as their parents once broke their heart for a few paper bills, while I'm smiling and recalling my mother in the city. So yeah, that's one.
All right.
It's really hard to read. Yeah.
Yes, yes, it's hard to hard to hear.
Yeah, exactly.
The piece that I like. Well, okay, please continue.
Okay, do you have anyone in mind you want me to read?
Yes, is Everything is Miserable Here.
Okay, everything. Okay, the story of this poem is also interesting. Let me tell you the story, it's like a short story. The story behind this poem is like, you know, when I went to Iraq, I went with my family. And for my father, it was his first visit after being outside for 40 years, 4-0. So, you know, you can imagine 40 years, like how many generations they came out. So my father decided to go visit, you know, the city he was born in. So when he went, he felt miserable, he felt sad because, you know, everything changed. And sadly, they didn't change to improving, they changed of being, like, really more, like miserable. So when I saw it, and my father, so I took this poem and I wrote it as if I was feeling my father. Because my father was feeling sad, he said on his own, he was just confused, was looking, and he was, like, kind of having this, you know, like, trying to look, you know, and he was talking to me and was like, oh, here, this thing used to be this here used to be cinema, now it's a gym. So you can tell, like, you know, sadly, after 2003, Iraq is not the same for him. So when I wrote this poem, I wrote it as if I was you know, in my father's shoes, you know, right? So I wrote it as of him. So that's why I wrote the poem, I put the title, Everything is Miserable Here. Everything is miserable here. Nothing is clean or clear to cross the hidden sidewalk. Weak chickens in dust rusty cages with less feathers on their skin, waiting to be slaughtered by the butcher. He's only 14 years old. He smokes a cigarette in one hand and uses the other hand to sharpen his knife. The ones who sell vegetables are even more dirty than wild pigs. They scream as no one has ears to hear them. The cats and dogs walk on the street looking for anything to eat, for the day, yet some people are waiting to hurt them. Once the moon appears in the sky, I talk to the invisible stars with hope that they will make my wishes come true and wipe the rules of the tribes away, far away from the town. Therefore, the sun arises far from another bloody revenge.
And lastly,
before
we close, I'd like you to read, "Send My Salutations."
Okay. Let me tell you something interesting about this poem. This poem, if I tell you how old is this poem, you'll be surprised, Michael. You know how old is this poem?
How old?
Well, okay, let me do the math quickly. Sorry.
Okay, it's all right. No problem.
Okay. This poem is actually 19 years old. And this poem was actually the first realistic poem that I ever wrote in my life when I was 10 years old. And this poem was edited by my father and my mother, you know, because they were happy for me. You know, it was kind of like my real serious one. So they helped me do the editing. And my father, you know, like when he wanted to like support me in writing poetry, he decided to publish it for a newspaper. You know, and it's funny, you know, when he came to Canada, you know, he came in 2000. And there was this man who told my father, and like, "Oh, that's your son." He's like, "Your son is famous now." And I was like, "What?" And then he showed me the newspaper. He's like, "Oh, look, your poem is in the newspaper." So, yeah, that's the story behind the poem. Anyway.
Okay.
So, my solution to you, my country, I'm sending my salute. From my family to your family, I send my special salutations. I sacrifice my soul for my religion, and I send my greetings. I used to pray for love and peace. My prayers are known but my God. I must send my salutations. My greetings to my homeland, the mayor, and I send my salutations. My country's statue will stay elevated, and should I send my salutation. To my homeland, I will return eagerly, and in peace, I will visit its grave. Crossing over, it will be the penguin's peace to my country, whose peace has been slaughtered. I send my salutations.
Thank you, Ahmad.
No problem.
And I want to thank you for joining me tonight to help celebrate your new book, Wounds from Iraq. It's a must read, and it's available on Amazon.com. You're a good man, Ahmad, and I look to hear more from you.
Thank you so much, Michael, and thank you for having me. And yes, you know, I would be more happy, you know, to be with you again, hopefully when I'm going to publish the part two, hopefully, and I can't wait to hear what people think about it.
All right. Fantastic. Have a good evening.
You too, Michael. Thank you so
much. Good night. Good night, everyone.
Good night.